Welcome to this podcast, developed for Recovery Month, featuring a site from BJA's COSAP, Tribal Responses to Drug Overdoses Demonstration Project. My name is Ben Eklund, and I'm a Senior Research Associate with IIR. I'm happy to be joined today by Jordan MacArthur, a Diversion and Recovery Coordinator with the White Earth Band of Chippewa. The White Earth Band of Chippewa, also known as the White Earth Nation, is a federally recognized American Indian tribal nation. Their Ojibwe name translates to white clay, named after the white clay that is prevalent everywhere on their reservation area. The White Earth Reservation was created in 1897 by a treaty with the 10 chiefs of the Mississippi Bands in Minnesota. The original boundaries encompass over 800,000 acres of land, or 1,300 square miles, in rural northwestern Minnesota, and encompasses three Minnesota counties. White Earth is the most populous tribe in Minnesota, with tribal membership at 19,000 enrolled members and an estimated 100,000 descendants. Jordan MacArthur, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start by talking a little bit about what life is like on your reservation. What would somebody who has never been to White Earth see upon visiting your reservation?
Yeah, so we're in northern Minnesota, very wooded along the prairie also. You'd see a pretty tight-knit communities. I think there's 11 communities total throughout the reservation. Would see a lot of people that are living by traditional ways of hunting, harvesting, and harvesting would be ricing, leaching, just ways of making a living, fishing, softball, attending powwows, going to the casino, and drum groups, things like that.
And are there any community events that are held on a regular basis that bring the community together?
Yeah, we often have recovery picnics. We have a CSO program that does community picnics also, just in each community to bring the community together to ensure that we stay a tight-knit community.
And is there a central location in White Earth that people gather? I know it encompasses a number of square miles. Is there like a downtown area of White Earth?
So like we have one village that is centralized, but not necessarily where we have all of our events. Usually we have our main communities of Natowash, White Earth, Pine Point, Rice Lake, and then Manoman. So oftentimes those is where our events will be held. And then Rice Lake, Natowash, and Pine Point all have their own, and White Earth all have their own powwows annually. So that's another time when our community members gather.
Now you mentioned you do have some events that focus on recovery. What has your experience been with witnessing the effects of drug use in your community?
Just seeing broken families. We have a lot of loss from overdose in the recent years, and just kind of sadness I see, but I also see another aspect of our community coming together to stand up and fight this epidemic of drug use. In my position, I can see it from several different views of where we're making great changes, but yet we still have a very strong using clientele. And
now you grew up in White Earth, correct?
Yeah, I grew up halfway between the town of Ogima and White Earth, and I consider myself from both of them. I do things in both communities.
Have you seen drug use get worse in more recent years? Has it changed? Has the type of drugs changed that individual are using changed?
Right now, we're really seeing the increase of fentanyl and fentanyl pills and less heroin in our communities. But I've been in the field since 2013. A lot of times we had a lot of alcoholism, those type of things, where opioids became a big thing within 6 months to a year of me working here, where we were seeing more and more of it. And now it's like less alcohol, but a lot of meth and heroin, fentanyl use.
And so that's been in the last 8 to 9 years then that you've seen this change?
Yep.
And what do you think contributes to drug use generally, but then also specifically to the switch to heroin and fentanyl?
Well, I think definitely historical or generational trauma, hard times accessing with us being such a rural area. Our reservations within three counties, that'd be Clearwater County, part of Clearwater County, part of Becker County, and all of Mahnomen County. Mahnomen County is one of the poorest counties in the state of Minnesota and has a very high level of poverty. And I feel like that's a very high factor with the drug use around here.
So then what responses has your tribe taken to address drug use?
In the recent years, we have created community health outreach workers in each community. And we've really strategized on finding people in recovery that live in these communities to train them and to ensure that we had strong representatives in the community that they're from to help engage clients into services. We also have had started a CSO program, community service officer. That's with the police department. And that's the same concept, is we're hiring people within those communities to help navigate community members through services that we offer. We have overdose response officers that work directly with the police department. They respond to the scenes of overdoses, and then they also do follow-up care after an overdose has occurred to keep trying to re-engage them if they were to refuse services.
And so what does the community outreach look like? Is it just one individual that's going out? Is it a team of individuals? How does that operate?
So we have several community, we call them CHOWs, community health outreach workers. We have several in each community. They go door to door. They have work vehicles. So if they're driving and they see somebody that's, they feels in need of services, they're pulling over, they're catching them right there on the street, encouraging them to go to treatment. And oftentimes our staff have been very successful in getting them to come in and sit down and do a Rule 25 or maybe start one of our medicated assistant treatments. And it's been a huge success.
And so in addition to treatment, what are the types of services that you said they could offer?
So our community health outreach workers oftentimes do like a comp assessment or a Rule 25. That's to identify what kind of needs that the client has. And then they can offer them into any services from inpatient to outpatient. We have a medicated assistant. We have a mom's program. They're also making referrals into mental health if they feel that something might just not be clicking completely. So they feel that mental health meeting with the crisis team or something like that, then they would make that referral.
And then after they make the referral, do they have any other follow-up with the individual?
Yeah, they would still follow that case as long as the client would want to continue to work with them.
And provide like supportive services to that individual?
So they can have different credentials based on their education or their licensure. So oftentimes if they might have a peer support licensure, so they would offer peer support services, helping them bring them to AA, NA, really about anything, getting their license, getting an ID, helping them find housing, those type of things. And then we also have a different licensure of a treatment coordination where they can, it's just a little bit higher level of care that they can provide to get them into services.
And then what is your role specifically in, you know, addressing drug use?
So I oversee 3 community health outreach workers that I oversee. And then I also see the civil commitment program that we have here. And that's a court ordered treatment involuntarily for CD and mental health. And so I have 2 staff that also do that. And then we also come together and work as a team on offering services to, if there's a fatal overdose, we team up with the crisis team. We go to the home, we bring them tobacco, bring them care gifts to ensure that they have our support. And then we continue to do that throughout the funeral process. And if we always tell them if they want to, they can check back in with us after the funeral. And then in the community thing, we sit down with our overdose response officers, our community health outreach workers on my team, and my civil commitment team. We all sit down on Mondays. We go over all the overdoses we've had since the first of the year. And then we identify the ones that we haven't been able to engage. And also we take our court-ordered clients that are high needs or our diversion clients that don't quite meet the criteria for the civil commitment court order, but they're borderline, we take all those clients and we assign them out. And then we'll, that week we go out and we try to locate them and to offer services. And we continue to try to do that throughout. And we don't really have a set time frame right now on that. We just continue to try to reach out if we haven't had success with them.
And now you said you offer grief support to families who suffered a loss of a loved one?
So the crisis team does it through mental health. And then we're there to support if they need Narcan or if they need treatment aspects. Our team is there to support during that time and offer any type of substance abuse treatment if family members want that.
And then can you describe the partnership that you have with law enforcement with the work that you do?
In the last probably 4 or 5 years, we've really built a relationship with just the law enforcement in general. From our civil commitment aspect of things, we work with them hand in hand all the time because they pick up our clients if they have a pickup order. Since we've started the overdose response, it's really improved. We couldn't ask for a better understanding from our law enforcement agency on addiction. I think it was kind of a struggle in the beginning. They weren't quite understanding some of the different things. And we've done a lot of training and just talking. And now all of our agencies carry Narcan. And they're the first ones to really make referrals. They see it firsthand. They're calling our CSOs or our CHOWs or our overdose people all the time, making referrals, getting us right into the community right during those toughest times of when clients are really going to engage. You know, they really need us. And we're fortunate to have good staff that are very willing to come out at all hours of the day or night and weekends. And law enforcement's right there is also giving input in and really encouraging the client to get services. And a lot of our law enforcement officers don't live here. They come, they live in surrounding areas and they come here for work. And I think they're really starting to build a relationship within our community too, to get the trusting aspect from clients of saying, okay, yeah, this guy does care, even though he doesn't live here, you know, he does care. I think that was a huge piece of this. Recently, I went to an overdose and the family had tried calling the law enforcement office, said, no, what, we made a mistake. They weren't really overdosing. And the officer went anyways. He's like, oh, I don't know, I'm still going to go. So he went there and he called me and we went there. And at the end, the lady was very thankful. And she asked him, hey man, you saved my life. Can I give you a hug? I thought that was a huge thing where 10 years ago, we wouldn't have seen that.
So you think this type of intervention and programming is helping to build that trust between even law enforcement and your community then?
Yes, definitely.
That's excellent. And then in terms of your approach to people, like how do you, you know, try to develop rapport with individuals? You know, if you're on the scene or even following up after an overdose, what does that look like?
Like I always tell my staff, try to walk a day in their shoes. Try to envision you being in that same thing and meeting them where they're at. I guess I don't try to force treatment. I don't try to tell somebody they have to do something. I encourage them and really try to motivate them of the good reasons why they should, and just encouraging. I feel like if you tell somebody they have to do something, they're probably going to go against it. And just to try to meet them at all levels. Right now we're in a really unique program where we're able to start people out even at the lower level of treatment if that's what they want, even though they may, from assessment, may require a higher level. And we've seen success in that too, because they start going and they feel welcome and they're seeing other people in their community reaching goals, and then they start feeding off of that also and start getting help themselves. And it might take a little while, but you know, they get it. I feel like we've had a lot of success with just doing that level of care too.
So just trying to engage the person kind of where they're at or where they're willing to meet you all.
Yes.
And I know you've already mentioned, you know, some successes that you've had. Is there anything else, I guess, any other successes you'd want to highlight in terms of, you know, the tribe's overall response to drug use and promoting recovery in your community? Anything you'd want to highlight?
Yeah, I think just our tribe, I'm thankful that we have the abilities to do the things that we've done and have had the support from our higher ups and our tribal leaders. They've been able to create some pretty awesome programming to definitely all support from all the higher ups and just all of our partners, our sheriff's office, their county ran, they've come together and supported us also. Just our other agencies, our hospitals, things like that, they've all have been pretty good in the recent years. And I think we all kind of face this in a way of seeing some of the same people over and over. And I think that's definitely helped of getting them on board. And we all kind of come together. Recently this spring, we met, we had IHS on the at the table. We had representatives from the county, human services, tribal, county sheriff's office. All of them were at the table and we're all putting input in. And I don't think we'd be able to succeed if we didn't all do that. That's one good thing we've really come a long ways on.
So just having that collaboration and the buy-in from those key community stakeholders is a success unto itself.
Yes.
And addressing the opiate crisis that you're seeing. No, that's a great point. And then, as I mentioned, this is Recovery Month. How do you think members of your tribe define recovery? And I guess, does it mean anything differently than it would for non-Native Americans in terms of recovery from substance use, drug use?
I feel like the people we serve all have different opinions of what recovery is for them, and that us as staff have to respect and meet them where they're at. A client that has more traditional values will likely start feeling more connected to their traditional values as they enter recovery, because they can start participating in the traditional activities. To be involved in a lot of stuff, you have to be sober. So I feel like that connection would be greater for the traditional clients that wanted to start taking part and engaging in those activities.
And can you give, again, just some examples of what some of those traditional activities might be?
Yeah, ceremonies, powwows, sweat lodges. I mean, that's some other things anyways.
Yeah, no, and thank you for that, Jordan. And you have a special guest today. Do you want to introduce?
Yeah, I got Puggy Goodwin. He's a security guard here, and he does drumming and dancing, does a lot of traditional values, and we invited him here today. We gifted him some gifts to sing us a healing song for our community. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, Puggy, welcome to the podcast. I know that Jordan invited you here to sing a healing song. Do you want to just describe the song that you're going to sing and how it relates to this topic of recovery and healing?
Bonjour. My name is Opwagance Goodwin. They also call me Puggy because nobody can ever really say my name. The song that I'm going to sing, we sing it at a lot of community events, funerals, powwow. It's just kind of like an all-around kind of a healing song where we just come together and we pray. And you know, there's a lot of songs that we could sing on different topics, on different things, because back in the day there used to be a song for everything. There's a cooking song, the sewing song, the canoe song, the ricing song. There's all kinds of different songs out there. And
so this healing song is specific to physical healing, emotional healing, mental healing. Is that right?
Physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual.
And when would this type of song typically be sung then?
Usually in the beginning of the event on whatever is going on.
So like we recently had a healing ceremony for all the people we've lost to overdose. And they'd sung a healing song, and we've gathered for a feast, and they did a walk. And then we also had a board where they wrote all the names. The community members wrote down people they wanted to remember, and we really recognized them at that time. And hopefully we'll continue to do that and let their spirit live on and in a good way. And we don't want to forget those people that, you know, had to struggle through those times.
Well, I'd like to close our podcast with that song. But first, Jordan and Puggy, I'd like to just thank you for joining us and describing a little bit about your home, your reservation, and you know the responses that you all have taken to the opioid crisis. And I want to thank our listeners for attending this podcast today. So Puggy, whenever you're ready.
Hey, I.
Miigwech.